This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
So hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Joe Chaplinsky in Boulder, Colorado.
Hey everybody.
And we're doing the both of us are doing the Vision Pro and our personas. So
yeah,
you get to see how laggy and performant they are, what it's like to be in a meeting for an extended amount of time. So that's cool. So I think I wanted to sort of have a chat with Joe, because I know Joe's pretty much a fan of the Apple Vision Pro as much as I am. And I think that there's been a lot of press about it. And for me, as a developer, obviously, it's a necessary platform to be on. But I'm really enjoying, I probably am on it every day since I've had it. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to work on a couple of projects before it was launched, which was great. And then I also went to the developer lab. Actually, that's a question I have for you, Joe. Did you go to any of the developer labs at all?
No, actually, I didn't have an opportunity at all summer. I was busy doing contract work for other stuff, and nobody who was paying me had me doing anything vision related. Yeah. And so much to the chagrin of the team here, there's a couple, a lot of the software for vision, parts of it anyway, were developed here in Boulder. Some of those folks come out to some of our gatherings and whatnot, and they kept saying, have you gone to a lab? Have you tried this? Have you done this yet? Have you, are you playing with the simulator? And I felt terrible. I had no chance to work on it at all. But since I've gotten it, I have actually been playing around quite a bit with a couple of app ideas now that I have it. But I didn't do any of the labs.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting you mentioned Boulder, because I was applying for jobs at Apple whenever I saw Vision Pro come up. My story was, obviously, and people have probably heard this before, but I was laid off in August, and I had booked the Vision Pro session, one of the very first ones in Cupertino at the end of August. And but for 3 or 4 days before that, I got laid off. And then, so, you know, said to Carol, what should I do? And she said, go, like, this is, you know, obviously go see what it is and who knows. And I mean, she's all in on it as well. She hasn't even put it on yet, which that's how much she believes in sort of my hype. Right. You know, and some of my family members have tried it. My granddaughter tried it the other day. She had a great time with it. And my stepson Jonathan's tried it as well. He was on the show on More Than Just Code last week talking about it, right? We did a crossover with Spotcast. But I went down with a skeptical frame of mind, right? You know, let's go see what it is. Is it going to be janky? Like, I mean, the Newton required it was a bit janky. It required a little bit of patience, you know. The original watch needed a little bit of patience. You know, the iPad was pretty good out of the gate. And thankfully we can copy and paste on the Vision Pro. I'm really thankful for that, because that was one of the problems with the iPhone for the first two or three iterations, I think, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, you know, for me, like, I the story I tell is I had done a painting in university of like these cubes floating in space, sort of a very sort of sci-fi book covery kind of thing, right? And because I was playing a lot with geometry and isometric shapes and stuff like that, and drafting techniques, so when I was thinking about what am I going to test when I go to the lab, because you've got to bring your code. You could download some of the stuff from WWDC we found at the time, but when we got there, so I made a couple of POC apps, right, to try out, right, proof of concept apps. And one of them was, I just made these cubes in Reality Composer Pro and colored them the same way I had in the painting. And, you know, I just, when I that was the come to Jesus moment for me. When I saw that, those cubes floating in front of me in the room, that was like, I just like mind blown, you know. I had also prepared a shark that was like swimming around me, around my desk, like a 7-foot, you know, hammerhead shark, you know, and it was just phenomenal to see it, you know, doing that kind of thing. Right. So tell me how your sort of experience with the device went. I was going to ask you about your ordering process. Did you order it and do a mail order thing, or did you plan to go to an Apple store and pick it up?
Yeah, so typical you know, Apple, they did the whole thing where I think at my time it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, which wasn't so bad this time around. It wasn't like a 3 a.m. wake up call. But yeah, the very first day ordering thing, I did that online. And, you know, they had warned us that we were going to need to be able to scan our faces with our phones, that we're going to be able to do this other stuff. But it was actually a really smooth process, so I was surprised. I mean, obviously, compared to iPhones, it's probably like 1/100th of the number of people trying to order at once. So the face scan went well. I did all that. And I did set it to pick up at the store, though. I wanted to go into the store to pick it up. There's this store like 5 minutes from here, so it was super easy for me to go to. And I find that going to the store first thing in the morning, especially if I can get a first morning appointment, is quicker than waiting around for the UPS truck all day long, or FedEx, or whoever they're using now. So yeah, I wanted to grab it right away. And that turned out to be cool, because when I went in, so, like I said, some of the folks here who work at Apple on this stuff, they got excited and they actually showed up at the store and they were like, nice, you know, saying hi to people as they came in to pick it up. And, you know, they were all excited to have me go in and get it, which was really cool.
So do you know Harlan from Apple?
Yeah, Harlan's one of the guys, who definitely was here, showed up, and they were very anxious to see, you know, me try it on.
He's been super helpful with, there's a group of us on Vision OS on a Slack channel that we all partake in, and he's been super helpful with, you know, sort of tips and tricks and things like that. Because, I mean, the challenge for working on this, I was writing tutorials on how to do it, how to use it. I just finished the Beyond the Basics using Reality Kit and Reality Composer Pro section, which comes out in March. But while I was writing, I was like trying to figure out where this stuff was. It felt very much like early iPad development days, where documentation was scarce. You pretty much had Apple's documentation, and then these, you know, the very politically correct, can I say it that way, Apple demos from WWDC. And of course, the code changed between the releases we were working on, you know, in October or November, from what, like, I had to go and fix a couple of tutorials to get them to work. Because the obviously things change in beta, right? But so he's been super helpful. But so for me, though, my experience was obviously being Canadian. I did look at buying one on day one, but I hadn't really negotiated with my life partner, Carol, about how we're going to pay for this thing. She's a partner on my company and that kind of stuff, right? So I looked at it. I went, you know, I had it all lined up. I wanted to see what the ordering process was, because we were concerned about what it was going to be like for people from international countries. But I saw that Paul Hudson had tweeted that he was coming to New York to pick one up. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, if he was able to order one, then maybe it's not that challenging. I was surprised that the Apple Store app let me scan my face, even though I was using a Canadian account, right? My challenge is I still don't have my corrective inserts as we record. February 27th, 26th, because they're stuck in customs, right? So I had to make an appointment to go to LensCrafter and I had to go to Rochester. I couldn't get an appointment in Buffalo because there's an Apple Store in Buffalo. But they kept suggesting I go to Syracuse and you know, this side of the world, that's every time you make a change is like another hour onto your drive, in terms of store. Yeah, right. Definitely. So, I managed so anyway, she, you know, she said, she agreed she agreed again that I should get one, right? Like no questions. It was no question in her mind at all, which is great. So, I ordered it probably, by the time I ordered it, best deal I could get was like a Sunday at, you know, 3 o'clock. I wanted to get 3 o'clock in the afternoon because I knew I was driving down, 3-hour drive, didn't want to get stuck at the border coming in, so I couldn't do a morning appointment, right? As it turned out, we breezed through customs and we got to Rochester by 11 a.m. or to the mall at 11 a.m., right? And so my grandson came with me because he can drive. And so we booked an appointment for him and myself to try it. And the reason why I'm asking about the light seal, though, is because there's been a lot of bad press about the light seal. And every time I measure my face, it comes back with 33W, right? Which is, and I'm not sure what the number, they were talking about on Accidental TED podcast the other day, the numbers have some sort of secret meaning. It's not like a number, right? That's a measurement. W, I guess, is wide or whatever. But when I was at the lab, I noticed that, like, right in the center of my vision, I could see like a little yellow bit of haze, right? And I never really noticed that. And when I was in the Apple Store and I put my fingers on the sides of my temples, that disappeared, right? Because every time I measure my face, I get the same measurement, right? And that's the seal that I'd ordered. And thankfully, I spent like 90 minutes with the folks at the Apple store because I said, like, you know, they had me, they had, one of the people had gone down to Cupertino and been trained. So she spent the time with me going through different light seals to get the right one for my face. And it ended up, I ended up getting a much narrower one than was like a much more curved, scoopy. And one of the other tricks she said about scanning your face is to put your elbow on the table in front of you so your hand doesn't shake when you're scanning your face, right?
Right.
You know, so I mean,
right.
I mean, kudos to Apple for making this super, you know, easy to order. But I mean, maybe there's, you know, I think if people are ordering, I was concerned if you were ordering, like, you know, by mail, which I know a lot of people did, are you getting the right seal for yourself? And, you know,
yeah. Oh, that's why when I got there to pick it up, you know, they would have let me just pick it up and walk out of the store.
No, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
they highly recommend that I do at least a fitting and not, if not a full tour. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to do the full tour because I just want to go home and play with this thing, right? But I said, I will. I said, yeah, absolutely. I want you to fit it and make sure that this, you know, that the light seal was correct. And so, yeah, similar situation, but a different outcome. Basically, we scanned my face in the store, and we found a different size than what I had scanned, you know, the night that I was doing. I'm like, well, maybe my face was puffy or something because it was 6 a.m. I don't know. So he was about to give me a different seal, but then the other guy came over and he's just like, I just want to verify, you know, why this is different and blah, blah, blah. And the guy said, well, he's going to have corrective lenses. I do have my lenses in here. And he said, that does make a difference with the measurements. So, you know, let's stick with his original fitting. And, you know, you can always come back and, you know, we'll swap it out later. And I'm like, okay. And we did that and it turned out fine. I don't have any problems with the sides, but what I get is that little bit of light leak in here with my nose. Just a teeny little bit and only in certain lighting conditions. And I kind of immediately forget about it. It's like if I'm in a really bright room, I can notice it, but then that goes away. And with the corrective lenses, I find there's a little bit more reflection. Like I think there's something reflecting off the screen and then into the corrective lens that does it gives it a little bit of a kind of a almost like a one of those you know, Star Trek, you know, effects J.J. Abrams kind of a...
Oh, you get the lens flare.
Bokeh kind of thing happens. Oh, it's just a tiny, tiny little bit of lens flare. And it's just like the teeniest little bit once in a while. And that only seems to happen when it's really dark, which yeah. I think is because I guess it's black in there plus the upright light coming off the screen. But yeah, all those little artifacts, I tend to not notice. The same thing, like a lot of people have been complaining about the peripheral vision being cut off and right. That your field of view is kind of narrow. Like I would have never even thought to say anything about that until someone brought it up.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to me. Like I'm like, yeah, I'm just shocked at how good everything looks. And most importantly, that I don't get sick from it. Like, because every other VR headset I've ever tried within 15 minutes, I'm nauseous as all get out. And this one, I wear it, you know, same as you, like pretty much every day and anywhere from 4 to 6, sometimes 8 hours in a day. And it doesn't bother me that way at all. Like, I know I'm looking at video. I know it doesn't look like perfect reality, but like within 5 minutes, I forget that. And I'm just looking at my content, you know, well, and doing my work.
Yeah, there's a couple. Well, I want to go back to the glare thing because I'm not using the lenses right now. And I see the glare too, especially when I'm watching a movie at night. So there is something there. I keep wiping the lenses thinking like, you know, I also wear glasses and I think you do too, right? So yeah, and when you got smuts on your glass, it really drives you crazy, right? So
totally.
Especially when I go to see a movie in the theater and I got to wear those, you know, 3D glasses and stuff like that, I really don't like having glare on my glasses because I'm there to be entertained, right? I don't want anything in my way, right? And totally. I mean, I got to say, we'll get to 3D videos in a bit, but watching 3D videos on this thing is phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the lens glare. I've also noticed that if it's really bright room and especially when it's first booting up and everything's black inside, because we're not really looking at, I'm looking at you, but I'm not really looking at you, right? Kind of thing, right? About, you know, I'm looking at the Mac screen, you know, mirrored on my Vision Pro on a couple of OLED screens that are like centimeters away from my face, you know, not even a centimeter away from my face. Like they're just like, they're like the, I do these pancake lenses. They're really, really scooped. Right. But yep. It's amazing. There's no distortion and all that kind of stuff. Like even with my eyeglasses, there's distortion. So to be honest with you, I'm not wearing contacts and I'm not wearing my eyeglasses. And this is like what my vision used to be like before I needed glasses. Everything's a bit blurry because I still need my corrective lenses. Don't get me wrong. But now, like I said, they're stuck in customs, but, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. So coming back, what I was saying was I went down to I should finish that story. I went back to LensCrafters, got a prescription, you know, so it's an American prescription, sent that off to Apple. And, oh, actually, I do have a follow-up item here, actually, because I was talking about lenses on the last episode. And so there was an issue with my lenses. I couldn't upload the prescription for some strange reason. And it turned out that when I went to the store and they changed my light seal, they changed my order. Right.
Oh.
So they canceled the AVP I had bought and they put in a new one with the right seal, because I guess for some inventory reasons or whatever, even though this, I was still getting the same serial number Apple Vision Pro that I bought, the light seal was different, right? And that broke the order. That broke the connection between my Zeiss order and this Vision Pro, which I have in my possession, right? So I finally called Apple afterwards and the dude kind of went, yeah, maybe the issue is this. And he went, and so we canceled, I placed a new order and then he canceled the old, the second part of the order, right? Because I had also ordered the case, a nice, you know, the Apple Vision Pro case with it, right? So once that got straight away, so I've been able to submit my prescription, but then I had him shipped to my friend in San Jose, who then shipped him to me, and then FedEx hit the border and they went, what is this?
Right. And then they sent me medical device crossing the border. Yeah.
Well, it's optical lenses. I mean, you know, and it's $140. Like, so I should pay, I'm willing to pay the $200 it works out to in Canadian, you know, tax, mm-hmm. right? Retail sales tax. I mean, that's another thing. I had to pay New York state tax as well as Canadian tax when I crossed the border. So all in, like my order was pretty expensive in Canadian dollars by the time everything was said and done. Yeah. But yeah, it's still... But coming back to like the vision, I mean, that's the phenomenal thing about this. I did do the demo at the Apple store, but I'd also used it previously when I went to the lab, right? And at the lab, we went through the whole thing with the lenses as well. And it was like better than wearing glasses, better than, you know, it was what my vision used to be like before, which is what I love about this device, right? But coming back to what you said about, like, you know, using it for 4 or 5 hours, one of the talking points I have with you is, I'll be in the basement, you know, in the evening because the dogs are all sleeping and, you know, I've got time to myself, and I'll open a bunch of windows and, you know, I'll get up and go to the bathroom and I'm actually like dodging the windows. Like they seem so realistic. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. The first time I walked through my email, I was like, oh, wait up. I thought I couldn't do it. And then I just like, wait, no, idiot, you can walk through this. And I did. And it still felt weird.
Yeah. So, and you know, you open, and then the weirdest thing is like for when you've been wearing it for a few hours, you take it off. Off and the windows are gone and you're like, oh, the windows are gone. Is that momentary sadness, you know?
The other thing I love is that when you walk past the window and you turn around, you could still see the close button and the move, you know, so you can close a window from behind it, which is actually pretty brilliant that they
have. You done the multi-store thing, or have you gone multi-floor thing, or have you gone like, is your house got multiple floors or a backyard or something?
No, I pretty much kept it all, you know, at any given time, I'm usually on one vertical plane.
So I'm in the basement right now and I've got my windows open and I'll go upstairs to make a coffee. So I'm like probably 12, 13 feet away, but upstairs. And if I look, I can look through the floor and see the windows, like, or if I leave one in I left one in the backyard for fun once, just to sort of see, you know, I can see through the concrete, the brick wall of my house and it's cool because you just grab the bar at the bottom and it snaps right in front of you. Right. So it's pretty trippy. Yeah. Like it's a trippy, work environment, as it were, right?
Yeah, I love that little trick of like just tapping right on the bottom, you know, and it'll just, especially if you've turned, sometimes I'm sitting and I'll just like shift my angle a little bit. And if I just press that, it'll tilt the window right to my, you know, to be flat to me. I find myself constantly like tweaking around the windows, especially my big Mac window when I'm connected to my Mac. And I find that it's like the ultimate monitor plus stand that could be adjusted infinitely. in a way that no monitor stand has ever been able to be exactly right for me. Like, I can get it closer to myself. I can get it further away when I want it. I can move it, you know, and resize it as needed. If I'm working on some really big detail work, I can zoom into it. And yeah, to me, it's just instantaneously, like, I want to get rid of any like external monitors I've ever had. And like, and you know, the real beauty of it is now, like, I'm going to be going to visit my dad next week. I'm going to Philly, and my entire setup now is going to come with me, right? I don't have, I'm not going to be just on a laptop screen where I'm used to being on this big monitor. I'm going to have exactly what I have no matter where I go, you know? And so I really like that aspect of it and the productivity side of it. I mean, I played a little bit of Fruit Ninja, and yeah, that's fun. I'm sure a lot of the other games are cool, but everyone keeps telling me I should try more of them. But for me, it's been 100% just working. Like, my Mac now runs Xcode and the Adobe Suite, and that's basically it. Everything else is just Vision Windows, you know, with my email and my Slack and all those other apps are just running in compatibility mode or natively. And yeah, now my Mac has really become this single force that just does the work that I need to do.
Right.
And nothing else.
I mean, that's one thing I do miss, though, is I actually have, well, mind you, my MacBook Air can only support one monitor because that's just the nature of the chip, right? But when I had, when I had the job computer, I could run two or three monitors off of it, right? So I do miss that. But I normally have my iPad sitting here beside me and my Mac sits up here in a stand and I've got a big 27-inch monitor in front of me. But I mean, right now I'm looking at a 4K display because I've got this virtual window open in front of me, right? So and then, you know, I'll put my mail over here and I'll put Safari over there and I'll put the App Store up here and I'll put I'm watching the dog sleep in the kitchen over here right now. You know, the other dog is on the couch, you know, so like it's all good.
Yeah.
I'm curious though. So you mentioned, so you're primarily working as a designer using Creative Cloud, you said, right? But have you tried any of the Adobe apps on Vision Pro, like Fresco or anything like that?
Yeah, no, you know, I know that they have Photoshop and Illustrator and all those things for iPad, and I have played with them a little bit, but I haven't tried them on Vision yet. Right. Have you launched them in like compatibility mode that they run?
Yeah, well, it's not so much compatibility mode. I'm talking about this. It's basically the iPad app, right? Like, if it runs iPad, generally speaking, unless they've unchecked it. I was disappointed when I first started using this thing. Like, 1Password, for example, didn't seem to be available. But they've made it available since. Because to me, the first app I put on any device is 1Password, you know, because like I'm lost without that right now. So so that's cool. What's your experience been like with the apps that are out there? I mean, like, there's one of my picks is a directory of apps that are available, which I just got like today at lunch, and I found a terminal app called La Terminal, which basically, and I logged into, I SSH'd into my Mac, and I'm like, I've died and gone to heaven. I've been in a Unix since like 2000 something or 1999, I think. So anywhere I can have a terminal on any hardware is great.
Right. It's cool. I didn't know there had been like terminals yet. I definitely should do that. Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
What do you think about the apps that are available on the store as of, like, we're, what, 2 weeks in, I think? 3 weeks in?
Yeah. I mean, there's a decent, you know, selection of native apps out there. I think the developers who are doing it best are the ones that aren't trying too hard to make it like, this is a Vision app, and so I'm going to make everything 3D, and I'm going to, like, you know, that works great for a game. But, like, if you look at something as simple as Fantastical, like, the implementation of it is perfect. I mean, it really just comes across, and I think they recently released CardHop as well, their contacts app, and it's just Fantastical, but in a native window, right? And it's, sure, that would have run fine on the iPad. I mean, Apple didn't even do their calendar app, and it runs fine as the iPad app. But it's just so much better to have it all in the native, you know, look and feel and style. And then you could, you know, start doing things like talking, you know, speaking into search bars and things of that nature. So like setting appointments and things get, you know, it's really easy with your voice. It's easy on the iPad as well. But yeah, so for me, apps like that, like, and I was surprised when I had been playing around with this little app I'm doing. It's kind of like a cocktail recipe journal for like an amateur mixologist like me. So it's like somebody who likes to make drinks at home, but like wants to write down their own formulas instead of using all the classic formulas all the time. And I was building that for iPad and an iPhone, and I have a Mac version going, and I'm like, oh, well, you know, let me try a Vision version, see how hard this would be. And compared to taking an iPad app and making, and this is all SwiftUI, by the way, it's like brand new iOS 17 only kind of thing.
Yeah.
As far as like what you need to do to make it work well on a Mac is still a lot more work than getting it to work in Vision, right? So Vision is like the way more of the API just comes straight across from iOS. And so, yes, there are certainly things you want to consider. Lots of things with hovering targets and things of that nature. Sometimes like a modal doesn't make any sense. Just open a new window, that sort of thing. But in general, like, I don't see any big reason other than the market, which is obviously not huge yet. I don't see any barrier to entry in terms of getting your existing iOS apps onto Vision natively, unless you're doing a lot of really custom UI, or unless you're doing an app that really does require a lot of 3D, and therefore you're going to want to do a lot of design rethinking. But if you have an app that's basically a productivity app, there's really no reason not to bring it to Vision, especially if you've been, you know, if it's a rather recent app and you're not talking about like an Objective-C runtime kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that the native apps are really good, the ones that are there. I just want to see more of them over time, obviously. And I keep checking in to see, like, okay, who's converted this week, or who's added a new thing, you know, this week. As much as I think there's going to be a lot of cool, new, interesting Vision apps that only work on Vision and only make sense on this platform, I do also think that your standard type of, like, I keep saying, like, if Apple makes me Xcode or whatever they want to call it, Playgrounds, you know, if they can make that, like, I can make all my apps, like, forget storyboards, I don't need them anymore. SwiftUI only version of Xcode called whatever you want to call it on Vision, then I probably at that point would probably... And if the Adobe apps work well enough through the iPad, I probably would not really need my Mac much more, which surprises the hell out of me. I mean, I've been using a Mac since 1986, and the iPad never came close to replacing my Mac. I never wanted it to be clear. But to me, Vision could easily do that, like with an external mouse and trackpad.
Because you can use but you're still using your Mac as an input device, like you're still using your Mac, you're still having a Mac window happening on your Vision Pro, right?
But only because I need Xcode or because I need the Adobe Suite. That's basically what's stopping me from from just doing the exact same thing with an external keyboard and trackpad.
Yeah, the only thing, like, if I could have multiple monitors, I think, like, I just finished writing the course for Codico again, and the scripts and stuff like that are the markdowns written. I do that in Visual Studio Code, and I would take the device off to do that because it was just a little easier to do actual writing that way. Because I could have my Mac open on my Mac monitor doing one thing, and then an external monitor with the Vision Studio Code on it and do something else. And that was the only time I really kind of took off this device. But yeah, like even during writing the course, I would put the thing on. I would obviously run parts of the code and do builds and stuff like that. It's written for people who just don't have a device. They can write with the simulator or whatever, but yeah, I was still, you know, still had the virtual screen going and that kind of stuff. So that's cool. I want to ask you, so one of the other things that they went on a bit on Accidental Tech Podcast or ATP was about the sort of fit, the weight, and like I see you're using the Solo Loop like I am. I think Solo Knit Loop is called, right? I can't talk about the other straps I've tried, unfortunately. but anyway, I'm sure it'll come back. I'm sure something will come up with that. But and one pro tip I learned was if I put a baseball hat on, it's actually a lot more comfortable because it spreads the weight out with the Solo Knit. But I'm liking the Solo Knit. So there's a bit of pressure on my face, but I remember correctly, are you... You were a hockey player at one point, right?
No. I wish. I can't skate to worth a damn.
Oh, okay. Well, so
I am a lefty though, so I do have an advantage there. But I played a little bit of hockey in early grammar school, but I was never very good.
Well, I was a goaltender, right? So my whole career as a hockey player, I've always had something on my face. Right. And as far as, and like you said, like if somebody hadn't pointed out to me what FOV was, field of view, I would not have even thought of this as an issue. But now that they've pointed it out, yeah, I do notice that I have to turn my head to look at the dog walking up the stairs a minute ago, right? But,
right.
But so I've always, maybe it's because I've always been used to playing hockey with the same limited field of view and something heavy on my head that I never really think about it. I'm always wearing a hat, right? So there's always something going on. So I don't know. Well, you were talking about your nose earlier too, and so you can see my nose barely like makes an impact on the thing because it's relatively small, I guess, right? But and I've seen some pretty interesting honkers on people, right? So because that is the one thing there is a bit of metal just in front of your nose, and I noticed at one point I was wearing it kind of funny, and I was getting like a ridge on the top of my nose. So I guess that's the only thing I think that could be a challenge for some people would be the proboscis that they've got in front of their face, right? But just so for people who don't know, there's a piece of fabric that sits over top of your nose, right? So the seal actually goes to like here on your chin and then or cheeks, and then to where the dogs are wrestling, I guess. Well, I have a camera. I can watch them wrestle. Oh, cool. Anyway, but how are you finding the weight of the device or the face tightness or whatever?
What I've been telling people is that this is a Polish head, and Polish people have the biggest heads on the planet. So, like, my neck has been holding this thing up for my whole life, and so, adding a couple of grams to it is not going to make a difference to me. I also think if you're one of those tendency, like a lot of us computer nerds who do this, you know, our neck is kind of like leaning in towards the laptop. Now your head is kind of suspended over, you know, midair instead of over your shoulders where it should be, and so you're going to feel that more if you're down here all the time anyway. I could see how some people complain about it, and you know, obviously if it could be lighter, sure, I'll take it. But it doesn't, that isn't, yeah, I'm with you. Like, all I feel is a little bit of the heat on the cheeks because the device does get a little warm. Mm-hmm. And so after, I'll notice it mostly after I take it off that, like, oh, my cheeks are a little flush, you know. But as far as this band, and then the other trick that the guy in the Apple store taught me was basically if you're feeling the weight down here on your cheeks, push down towards the weight. And if you're feeling the weight up top on your head, then push it up away from it. So basically you go in the direction of the heavy weight and it should rebalance itself. And so every once in a while I'll do one of those little adjustments. But other than that, yeah, it doesn't bug me the way other people, again, it really depends. You know, we can make fun of people for having weak necks or whatever, but I think it really is a personal thing, and it depends on exactly, you know, like I said, where your head usually sits. If it's usually kind of hanging over your body, that's going to be a bigger problem for you than maybe for others. It's actually a great inspiration for me to actually put my neck where it belongs. I've been getting told by Alexander teachers my whole life that I should be doing this, you know, not totally back, but you know what I mean? Like better than where it is. And I find because I'm using my laptop, I'm not looking down at my laptop anymore. I put my screen up here. So I'm actually not doing this as much as I would have ordinarily thanks to this thing. So I don't know, maybe it'll inspire better posture in people long term. But I also think in a couple of years, we're going to see this thing be like half the weight and that'll make a big difference.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm already like, you know, as much as I want to be on the bleeding edge with it, I'm already regretting the fact that there's going to be a better version of it coming out soon, right?
Like somebody said. I wouldn't bank on it soon. I would say it's probably going to be at least a couple of years before we see
it. Yeah, yeah. This has been, you know, 10 years at least in development. Like, I think the patent was 2007. Somewhere in there, right? So, yeah. But I'm amazed at the drawings that I've seen from back then, but then what else are you going to do, right? So, I mean, from a technology point of view, I think Apple waited for the right moment when all the technology converged to the point where they could make this thing the way it is. But I mean, like, you know, I get really frustrated. I'm a cinephile, so I go to movies in the theaters all the time. And last night, I by the way, if you're interested, Dune right now is $4.99 on the App Store. I was going to rent it last night because we're going to go see it on. We have tickets to see it on Sunday, and I was going to watch it again. So I figured out I'm using my American account right now, which is everything I'm buying on Apple Vision Pro right now is a throwaway for me because when it does come to Canada, I'll switch to my Canadian account, and then I can't, you know, anything I buy. Bye-bye.
Until the next product that they make with unregulated lasers. Yeah.
Yeah, it was an investment. Yeah, exactly. Is that what it is? Okay, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's the lasers. Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, it's funny. I had I had opened an account for my iPad when the iPad first came out, and that was the same. I just went back and I wonder if this account still works, and logged back in, and sure enough, you know, it still had all the financial information was still there. I'm like, okay, cool. I'll just use this account, right? So, but anyway, so I was watching Dune last night, Dune Part One,
And it's such a silly thing. Like, you know, like I'm loving the Disney stuff because all the Disney movies that can be in 3D are in 3D. Hang on, my dog wants to get up. You can get up on the couch. What's wrong with you? Have a puppy. Dorsha. I can't reach you from there. I'm all tethered. Sorry. Anyway, she'll just have to suffer. So I was watching Dune last night, and just not having to put on those goofy 3D glasses. And yeah. I was going to say, it asks you when you first started, do you want to watch it in 2D or 3D? I'm like, you have to ask.
Yeah, you know what? That would have been a relevant question, I think, you know, as far as going to the movie theaters. I always choose the 2D option because I find it's like wearing sunglasses in a movie theater, like 3D movies in the theater. I never got it. I certainly never thought it was worth paying more for, and I'm not cheap, but like it just was, and I would get a headache from just the 3D glasses. But I, same thing, like the first thing I wanted to try was Dune because I'm like, all right, they have that in 3D, sold. And I put that on and I watched it. I'm like, this is what 3D is supposed to be.
Yeah,
like
100%.
All this time, like I finally see what the director saw in it, and I'm like, it's subtle. It's not like overdone. It's not like the ooh, like pokey in the eye stuff. It's just a nice field of view. And it's, yeah, it just makes the whole 3D experience so much. Now I'm like greedy. I'm like looking at it, I go, why only The Hobbit? Why not the other movies in 3D? Like they haven't like converted a lot like Lord of the Rings aren't in the 3D yet. And a couple other things in my library.
Did you try the Marvel stuff? Like Endgame and...
Yeah, Disney's got a lot of stuff available, which is great. Yeah. I was on a plane recently already. I watched Dune and I watched the first Wonder Woman was available. A couple others that are out there already, which is really cool. Disney's got a good selection of 3D movies already. A lot of the Pixar movies are 3D already too, which is nice.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'll have to go buy one. So I haven't got my Apple TV app working yet, other than this one movie I bought. But because I might spend a few bucks to turn Apple, because I have Apple One Premier on my Canadian account, right? But I can't share this U.S. account with it, right? It's that whole CRTC, you know, cross border rights and stuff like that, right? But yeah. But my Disney app does work, so I've got the Canadian. I've logged in with the Canadian account. So I want to ask you, so since you have the Disney app on your device, when I go to the menu, I used to see a 3D menu at the bottom, like you know, in the ornaments on the side. Mm-hmm. There used to be like a little 3D icon, and I can go there, and it would give me a short list of what movies were in 3D. That's gone for me on Disney.
Oh,
I don't see that anymore.
I'm gonna look real quick.
Yeah,
I didn't notice it disappearing. But, you know, I wasn't paying that much attention. I'm launching Disney right now. They even do, like, their launch screen in 3D now. Oh, yeah. I saw a 3D there. You don't have it?
Yeah, the little icon. Yeah, I don't have that anymore.
That's interesting. I wonder why it's gone from the Canadian version.
Well, but it's not supposed to work in Canada yet, right?
Yeah, right. Yes, who knows? Untested setup there. But, yeah, I thought that was a nice little shortcut to get to just the 3D content, which I thought was great. That's a... Movies in general, like especially on the airplane, it's transformative. Like I forgot I was on a plane a couple of times last time because I just put myself in. When they're serving drinks or whatever, I get out of the, like, it's interesting. We can have a whole discussion on the whole environments thing. But
yeah,
I think
that.
The brilliant part of environments is that Apple lets you dial them in and out as needed. Like if I'm in a coffee shop, I kind of don't want to be fully immersed because I want to see the people around me. I want to be socially aware. I want to make sure that I'm like not disturbing anybody. I also don't, you know, someone wants to run by and grab something off of my tabletop. I want to be able to see that. So being able to dial that in and out is really amazing. And even if something as simple as like taking a drink, like people on the, I think the person sitting next to me on the plane, because this is like 2 days after it came out, I was already flying with it. And, I just went to my tray table. I picked up my water and I took a drink and I think she looked at me like, oh, I didn't know you could see like your glass, you know, like, I'm like, yeah, I could see everything until I dial that out, you know, when I want to.
Right.
And even when I'm on my Mac, I'll do the environment just up to where my keyboard is. Cause even though I can touch type without my keyboard, like I still need to see it for some of those, you know, F keys and whatever the occasional key that I can't quite find. I want to be able to see my keyboard. I love being able to dial those in and out. I think that's a really brilliant move. And it's cool that Disney provided a few of their own. And then my favorite one is in the Apple TV app, you just have a theater. It's just like you're in an empty theater. The Max app didn't do as good as, I think they did one. It's like the Game of Thrones throne room. And it's like kind of like not done to that detail.
Oh, Max, Disney okay,
went,
yeah, yeah.
That went through. Yeah, the Max app, it's okay, but it's just, it looks like a 3D environment instead of you actually sitting there like you, you know, in the Marvel ones or whatever, and the Star Wars one in Disney is pretty realistic and pretty amazing.
Yeah, the Tatooine Speedrunner and, yeah, the Disney Theater. So the Max app, so are you getting 3D content through Max?
There, I don't think there are any. I've just been watching some TV shows through there. I don't think there's any 3D there yet.
Hmm.
But yeah, they do offer that one environment. I imagine they'll add more over time. But you can also always just dial in and sit and watch a movie in Mount Hood or, you know, one of the other standard locations. And you just have this giant screen over the lake. You know.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the thing about the watching a movie, because I noticed even with the Apple Vision one, I mean, I used to go to this one theater downtown, which had amazing sound. They tore it down, but your eye line would be right at the top of the screen. So you're just looking down, like, you know, naturally at the whole screen. It was a phenomenal seat. So if you, depending on where you like to sit in the theater, when you're watching on the TV app, you can choose to be on the floor, on the balcony, front row, back row, or in the middle, right? I prefer balcony in the middle, because then the screen is not up here. I'm looking at it down here, so which to me is much more comfortable, right? So that's pretty cool. I love the fact that you can just not have the environment on and put the movie window wherever you want, which is really cool. I mean, it's hard to explain to people who haven't tried it, but it is, I think it's pretty flexible in that sense. Let's talk about that. So price-wise, do you think, some critics have said this is a dev kit. Some critics have said, you know, this is not, it doesn't, or they're comparing it to the Quest or whatever, which I think is a completely waste of time, because I'll never even try those, right?
Right.
I'm not I'm not really a gamer, so there's no point in my even trying that stuff. But what do you think about the price of this thing versus what you're getting with it in terms of, like you said, monitors and experience and portability?
Yeah, I think in terms of, it's an extremely personal thing. If it's me, you know, to me, it's already paid for itself, because I can sell my monitors. I get the whole thing about the price. I really do. If you're looking at it as this, like, the best way to watch the only way, as far as I'm concerned, to watch a 3D movie, yeah, I probably wouldn't have spent this much money just to watch 3D movies. I mean, I love 3D movies, you know what I mean, now, but I wouldn't have done it just for the airplane or, you know, and I know that's how people use their iPads. And it's like, I get why you're not buying a new iPad Pro regularly, because you don't use it for things that are that meaningful. And so, yeah, if it's an entertainment only kind of device, unless you're really into the gaming side of it and the 3D side of it, you know, I'm sure there's people who can justify the price there. But I think the main people who are not, or thinking this is way too much money, are the ones who are thinking that's all they're going to use it for. And for me, I'm using it 6 to 8 hours a day with my Mac to do work. And I'm getting paid to do that work. And I've already got one client who's saying, hey, I want to head in this direction. It looks like this is going to be an important thing. It's going to, like, to me, that's like a no-brainer, right? And if you think about price-wise, like, in 1986, my Mac SE was, you know, inflation-adjusted dollars was a lot more than this, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But that's the thing. People don't see this as a Mac. They see this as a toy or as something that they're just playing with or entertaining themselves with. And the entertainment, to me, is all a bonus. I was doing fine on an airplane with my iPad, but this is, like, just that much better.
Well, do you fly a lot?
Yeah, I tend to fly 8 or 9 times a year at least. Okay. So, you know, for me, that's, you know, it's the best way to, like, kill time while I'm sitting in that terrible, way too small seat, you know, in coach. So
that's true.
I'm too big to use a Mac on a plane in coach, because I just can't, like, the person in front of me leans back and that's it. I can't even open my laptop screen, you know?
Same.
So I could put a keyboard and trackpad down and actually work with this in front of me if I wanted to, but I tend to want to just, I don't even get the Wi-Fi on planes. I just like to, that's the one time I'm, like, unplugged.
Right.
But you know, just what I was saying earlier about how I can take my entire office now, like everything, like I'm in no way compromised when I go to my dad's house for, you know, 6 or 7 days next week, and hang out with him. I don't have to worry about me having limited, ability to do the work the way I can do my workflow exactly how I do it at home. And for someone like me, that's extremely important, because I've been working from home for decades. And I, I don't know about you, but like the longer I spend in this office, you know, the more I want to just, like, at least once a day, hop into a car, go to a cafe, get a coffee and just work there, you know? And I could bring that whole office with me. And yeah, I am that weird guy using it in the coffee shop. I wasn't at first, but the Boulder people, the Apple people here convinced me that no, you should try it, because they weren't allowed to. They were using prototype devices for the longest time, so they weren't allowed to show them in public. But yeah, it's like I find that pretty much like everything else here in Boulder, people just ignore you and you're the weird guy with the goggles on your head, and no, they don't really think anything different. I've had one or two people stop me and say what is that, or how do you like it, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Not as much as I would have thought, and it's not as, I haven't had anyone ask me hey, can I try it? Because that's the one weird thing about this. It's Apple, I get it. It's a very personal device and it's not easy to share. The mm-hmm. guest mode thing is interesting, but it's so much work for them to actually do the calibrations and everything else that it's it takes too long. And again, at that point, what are they looking at? They're looking at my photos, they're looking at whatever apps I allow them to see, and it's still my personal data. So it's not ideal for sharing it. I just tell people, go to the Apple Store, they'll be happy to let you play with it. But I haven't had too much of that. So for me, I don't know, to me, it's well worth the price. And I didn't even think twice about it. Now, it did end up being, like you said, more than I was expecting, because you got to add the lenses, and I did buy the case, and then I got a spare battery too, because I do not being tethered to anything. And where I at my living room, especially, there's just no plug anywhere near where I would be sitting. And so I would have to have a long extension cord, and I'm so afraid of tripping over stuff. It's no, not worth it. So I just have two batteries. And so if they were hot swappable, that would be cool. But if they're, since they're not, it's not a big deal to just shut it down, swap the battery, put it back on. And then one battery is always charging while the other one is working. So I don't know. I don't feel like battery life is that big a deal at this stage either, with the two batteries. But again, that all adds up. So to get back to your original question, is it worth it? Absolutely, for me. Now my friends know I would have found a way to justify it regardless. Just because I always want to have the new cool thing. But I'm actually excited that it already is, it's become such an integral part of my productivity life, that it's I don't have any worries about that anymore. At first I thought, okay, when I'm going to connect it to my Mac and it's going to be flaky or it'll be blurry or I won't be able to see it right and I won't want to use it. And within a week, I'll just it'll sit in a shelf or you know what I mean? I'll just use it for movies. That was a real possibility, but yeah. I don't think that's going to happen at this point. I'm really into just working this way now.
Yeah, I mean, there's a slight amount of isolation, but mm-hmm. because I got the puppy right now, we have a 4-month-old puppy, so she's constantly needs, you got to be watching what she's eating and chewing, and she's trying to eat the house. I call her the house inspector, because if there's a cable out of place, she'll find it, right? And she'll chew it. But I mean, that's why I bought a second battery, because I figured the puppy's going to at some point attack the device. She hasn't gone near it yet so far, which is great. I think it's different if you have cats. Cats tend to be a bit more, they don't like change. And so they tend to go and investigate things more. But I bought a light seal for Carol to try. Thankfully, it fits my grandson. His face scanned the same way, which is great. So, I don't feel they're still mint in box. So, if I want, I can sell them at any point in time too, right?
Right.
But, especially since you can't, if you had to buy a battery in Canada right now, you can't, right? And I happen to have one. So, in the box. But, I don't know. I just, I think the one side of it is it's kind of a necessary expense for me. And when the M1 or it wasn't an M1, but when the Apple Silicon Mini developer kit was available, shelled out the money for that. Mm-hmm. Turned out that when we had to return those, we thought it was going to be a $700 investment. We would not see any return on other than being ahead of the game. They gave us a credit back for $600. So I ended up using that to buy my first M1 Air, right? Which I'm talking to you on now, right? So, so that was cool. But I don't regret buying it, and I have been sharing it with people. I just tell mm-hmm. them, just don't send any email from my email account when you're in there.
Right.
But I think probably because I did the demo at the Apple Store, I know what Apple runs them through. So they open up they show them photos. I have some spatial photos I took of my dog. I show them that, there's a Alicia Keys demo in the TV app. There's an Alicia Keys demo. There's I don't know if you've seen the rhinoceros one.
I haven't watched that one. I watched the
Prehistoric
one.
when you be prepared, when you watch that one, those rhinos come right up to the camera. Like, it's scary how close they are.
That's great. Right?
And of course, they also run you through that Explore Dinosaur one. That's the one. I always start people with that one, and then, you know, hold your finger up. And the tricky part with guest mode, though, is when, if, like, what I do is I stream it to my iPad so I can see what they're looking at, right? Yeah. Until they decide to play copyrighted material, because then you can't, the screen just goes black on the iPad. Also goes screen on the black screen for the person trying to watch it, because you have to teach them how to, you know, do that trick where you look up to get your control panel and turn off the video mirroring, because then they can watch the copyrighted content, right? That's the only annoying thing about guest mode. I had a friend of mine try it the other day, and he ended up getting out of guest mode, so he had to enter my PIN code to, you know, the 6-digit code to open to unlock the thing, and he couldn't figure out how to, like, tap or who's doing this. And I guess there are, you know, some where people tend to, like, look at the thing and they hold their finger up in front of it and click, right? But you don't have to do that. Your hands down at your side will click just fine, right? So
I've heard a lot of people complain about the typing, and, like, for me, it's like, don't try to tap the buttons, like, just look at them, and, like, I can move my eyes pretty fast and just, like, click, and, you know, I've gotten pretty good at it. I'm still not good at an iPhone keyboard, because, you know, the autocorrect still does crazy wacky stuff for me.
It's insane.
It's frustrating still to type, obviously.
Well, thankfully this is a new version of Siri, right? Because a lot of times when I want to do something, I'll look at the little microphone in the window, and I'll just say what I want to say.
Yeah.
Right. And it doesn't get it 100% right off the bat, but I think it does go out to the cloud and
correct.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You said this. So, and it comes back and it does correct it. But so it is a bit laggy that way, but you can dictate to the thing pretty well. I mean, like, it's phenomenal that way. So, I mean, overall, I'm saddened by the negative reviews I've been hearing about the device, because my experience with it is positive. I mean, I've worked with some pretty janky stuff from Apple over the years, right?
Yeah. Well, I called it the best 1.0 they've ever shipped, and I stand by that. You know, there are definitely some quirks, and I've had a few little dropouts and other issues, but for the most part, it's been rock solid. And all the complaints people have had for years about the iPad not, you know, being able to do multitasking and not being able to do this and not, like, all that is solved on Vision already. Yeah, like, the OS, obviously things like rearranging your home screen icons, that'll come, you know, like, give them a minute, you know, things like... you know, remembering, like, I can imagine how hard it would be. Like, I, you know, on a Mac, you got a 2D right windowing interface. And yeah, it'll remember where your window was next time you launch the app, if the app was written properly. But, you know, Vision doesn't have that sense. Like, you launch something and it just shows up. Like, so if they could get the windows to remember where they were last time,
100%.
And I would take it the next step, like, make geofence that. So, like, when I'm in the living room or when I'm in, or, you know, I guess geofence wouldn't be enough. Like, inside, you'd need, like, something like, just do a quick scan of the room. And it's like, oh, okay, it's this room. Put the windows here. We're in this room. We're in this coffee shop. Put the windows here. That would be amazing. And then let me just bring up a whole, like, graphical thing of my different window arrangements, sort of like, you know, the spaces concept on the Mac, and just let me choose one, you know. Stuff like that will come, you know, those kinds of, like, advanced windowing techniques and things will happen over time. But already, like, I feel like I could be super productive. And I don't know what it is. I think for certain people, just spatially being able to put things in certain places and have them there. Like, I find my email is so much less distracting when it's just sitting over here on my left, and I have to physically turn my head to see it. So it's not sitting side by side with my Xcode.
Or popping up in front of you all the time. Right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they're not, the windows aren't. Now, you can have windows on top of windows on top of windows if you want to, but you'll drive yourself nuts. But, you know, once you arrange them into a nice, neat fashion, you know, to me, it's already ahead of the game there in terms of what you can do on it compared to iOS. You know, it already has a Files app. It already has, you know, so many of the things that iOS was missing when iPadOS
came out. Copy and paste.
Yeah. And seamless integration with my other devices. So if I copy something on my phone, you know, it's available to me. You know, those kinds of things, like all that work they did on continuity now makes so much more sense. Like, as soon as my Mac's connected to the Vision, now I can control all my Vision apps with my trackpad, you know, and I don't have to worry about typing anymore because I just type on my keyboard.
Yeah.
A lot of that's like, I you take for granted like how much work goes into stuff like that. How much work went into just something as simple as depth. Like when you're zooming that window out, it stays readable, which means they're adjusting font sizes as you go further and further away. They're doing other kinds of tweaks to the system behind the scenes, and it looks like it's not a lot, but until you realize what's going on under the hood. And again, that's classic Apple fashion, right? They're hiding the complexity of it.
And my kitchen is a 10-foot cube, for example, right? So when I open up Windows, they fill that 10-foot cube, right? But I was at a photo studio the other day, which is like 50 feet by 50 feet by, you know, 30 feet high, and the windows were filling, and they were like, so like I've been looking at like a billboard sized window with my email on it, you know, like like it messes with your head in that sense, right? In the same sense you were talking, you know, I were talking about walking through your email the other day, right?
Yeah, but, yeah. It's amazing. And you can, and that's the other thing, is you actually can touch the windows. Like if you're close enough to them and you can scroll with your finger, you could do all the regular, you know,
yeah,
as
you
if
can,
you're...
you can pull it in close and it'll tilt down like as if it's an iPad, and you can scrub with your finger and type. And I mean, so yeah, so like even when the pin code thing opens up, you can just poke at it with your finger, right? And hit the keys. So there's a lot of, my experience with it over the last 6 months, it has improved a lot, believe it or not. But, you know, from what I remember about the first couple of times I tried it to where it was when it shipped to 1.0. And I hear 1.1 is again, that much better, right? So I have a lot of hope in this thing. But I think, you know, I don't know. It's amazing. Like, there's no learning curve, right? I mean, there's like maybe a half an hour learning curve. But once you get going with it and you realize, hey, I can do this, you know, now I'm already thinking of sort of the power user things. Like, yeah, Joe, I do want to have a Windows one in front of the other, but I want a way to flip through them. Like, where's my Alt tab and my Command tab, you know?
Yeah. More gestures with my fingers.
I have no idea where my Zoom window went. I closed it a little while ago. And it's in front of me because my avatar is looking forward, but every time I shake my head, just for the people at home, every time I shake my head, there's a message comes up saying that this microphone is too close to my face.
Yeah, I'm getting that too.
through the show, we're getting this like, you know, thing popping up in front of it. Minor things like that, right? So, like notifications, they appear like a little icon that floats above you and you can just totally ignore it. Yeah, there's so many cool things, edge casey things that they thought about that it's a minor inconvenience, most of the things that people complain about, I think, right? So
yeah. Another interesting thing about that I didn't mention in any of my writings or talking to other people about this, but it's the first OS Apple ever built that doesn't have a clock that's facing you 24 hours a day, right? There's no, like the time is in the control center. You can go get it at any time, but like, where would you put it, right? And I know I've noticed there's all a bunch of apps out there. Just like, oh, put your clock, you know, in your face if you want. And that's great if you want it, but like, I'm glad it's not there in a lot of ways. Like when I'm on my Mac, I could see it on my Mac menu bar, but it almost makes me want to take the clock off my Mac menu bar because it's kind of freeing to not have the time in my face all the time.
Do you know, I think it was like around 2000 or so, maybe around in that time period, I stopped wearing a watch altogether because, you know, I had a cell phone, I had like, you know, I was an IT manager, so I was always available to everybody. And I was constantly looking at the clock and like, you know, living my life from 9 to 5, like when can I go home kind of thing, right? I just stopped wearing a watch because I found that just having time in your face all day long was I was losing, you know, the whole mindfulness thing. Like I was spending too much time paying attention to what time it was. And it wasn't until the Apple Watch came out that I actually started wearing a watch again, right? And again, because the Apple Watch added more than just adding time. It was notifications and you could quickly glances, that concept they first came out with? You could glance at your email message and decide whether you wanted to actually open your app. And which is, to what you're saying, is kind of cool. Is like, it's literally on your face, but it's not in your face.
Exactly. And that's what I mean. Like I, you know, when the rumors of this thing came out, like I had tried other VR headsets and it was like never an interesting category to me at all. It wasn't something I thought I'd want to do because I always thought it was pretty much for games and that's fine, but like not a thing I do regularly. Plus every time I try one, I get sick. So I was like, okay, this is just a, you know, so then I hear Apple's going to do this thing and I'm like, well, I hope they solve X, Y, and Z. And I hope that the biggest Z problem was, you know, make it useful to me, you know, make it something I actually want. And then there was, you know, the people who think, oh, well, Apple's just going to make them into like just regular eyeglasses eventually. And now that I'm using this, I realize like there's things they won't be able to, like this world of putting this and being able to do environments and all that stuff, you can't do that with glasses, right? Glasses.
I'll tell you, I have 100% the answer to that, right? But before we get to there, I want to just talk about the sickness thing, because I did read somewhere that Apple's doing something where they're flickering something in your eye that's counteracting the motion sickness.
Huh.
Yeah, so there is, they've thought about that too. So here's where I think this is going. I mean, this is why I'm all in on Vision OS, and this is why I'm out there proselytizing. Get involved in Vision OS. Start writing apps for Vision OS. And I've got a couple of courses on Codico. Paul Hudson's coming out with something. All the people out there are coming out with something on this. It's definitely something you're going to get involved in. And to circle back on what you said earlier, I found it a lot easier to write the Vision OS version of my app than it was the Mac version.
Definitely.
Which still is not on the App Store because there's a couple of things I haven't got into the whole, you know.
I forgot those are there. Does that even work?
It's not doing it now, yeah. But anyway, I envision, so think about it this way. They've come up with an operating system that can put imagery in front of your face.
Right.
Right? So in the future, you know, you'll send your kid at 8 years old into the hospital. They'll put a chip behind their ear with an augment that will allow these images to be projected into their brain.
Right.
Because think about it, right? You and I are perceiving these windows. They're not really there.
Right.
Right. We're perceiving this sound that's surrounding us. We're perceiving all, you know, this. We can touch things and they move, they respond to your touch and your finger motions and stuff like that, right? So I don't see why this can't, it doesn't have to be any kind of device you put on your head. It could be something you put in your head.
Yeah. I think, I mean, as much as I'm sure there's a bunch of people who are like scared out of their minds of that, even that notion, I think if there's one company that could pull that off, it's Apple, because obviously we've heard from Zuckerberg that he's working on something with that, with controlling these things with your brain. And we know what Elon Musk is up to. And
he's like, doing
are you really going to give your brain to either one of those guys? Like, no. Right. But like, you know, like, and that's why I think this building a trust thing is so important for Apple, and why privacy and all that stuff. It's like, it's more than just marketing to them. It's like their entire future is going to bank on that. You're right. In a lot of ways, like our brain, how did Jeff Hawkins put it? Your brain is just sitting in a black box. It doesn't see the world at all. Right? It's our senses that give information to the brain. So your brain's experience of the world is literally in a dark room 24/7. And that's sort of what we're doing with these, is we're replacing our vision, you know, that sensory with what they're projecting through this thing. And so, yeah, why wouldn't you just replace or augment what's already coming through my eyes with something else that then puts the thing in front of you, like not literally, but in your head. Interesting. I mean, that's way, way out. Even the eyeglass thing, though, I can see that being like a different version of this, where it is just windows in front of me. Like what I've always visioned is like me walking around with glasses on, like normal. And like I walk up to a store and I could just see it's hours, you know, like they're open or they're closing in 10 minutes. Or like, you know, what's the menu? I can just grab the menu, you know what I mean? Or at the ultimate thing, when you're at a conference, like everybody's name just pops up over their heads. So I don't have to ask people their names that I forgot 16 times. Little things like that. But like, you'd never be able to do like the Haleakala, you know, full on immersive whatever with eyeglasses, because you could see the real world around it. But you're right, that brain implant, I hadn't thought about that. That's scary, but that will probably happen in our lifetimes.
Well, I mean, it goes back to my university days, because I was very into perception at the time. And because, I mean, I was studying fine art, right? And what is art? Art is just representing the world to you through pictures or theater or music or, you know, whatever, dance, right?
Right.
And, you know, like as you study the history of art, they're trying to perfect the craft to the point where photography came out and killed, you know, realistic paintings or realism, right? But right. And surrealism was like taking dream states and putting them onto paintings, and you get Magrittes and Dalis and stuff like that. And you know, you're now seeing a world that didn't exist until that person put that paint on the canvas, right? But that's essentially the same thing. Like you and I are having a conversation. You're in Boulder, I'm in Toronto. You know, I'm looking at you, or am I?
Right.
And I'm looking at two versions of Joe. I mean, we should talk about personas too, but I'm looking at your persona, I'm looking at your actual face with the display on, and you're just looking at the same thing with me, hopefully, right? But Yeah, it's it. I always joke when perception is 9/10 of the law, right? Like, in so many different ways.
Yeah,
that's where I think that's the future I see. Like, it's not so much the Ready Player One where you put on the haptic suit and you're. Did you see the Disney floor that when you walk, if you turn, you walk, and as you walk, it the rollers move underneath you, but you physically don't move anywhere in the world.
Interesting. No.
And then you turn 90 degrees, and they start rolling that way.
Oh wow.
So Disney already has a virtual, so you could put on the Vision Pro and you could start walking around Mount Hood and Apple could project you through the virtual environment, but you're physically not moving.
Right.
Which is the same is the Ready Player One thing, right? So.
Yeah. And your brain wouldn't know the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the whole idea of the haptic feedback on your body, the haptic suit is that, you know, you feel warm and cold and whatever. Yeah.
Right.
And you're talking to people who aren't even in the same space with you physically, right?
Right.
So we're already there. I mean, we're you know, we've gone from making transatlantic telephone calls to
right
to now we're having a chat on with a goofy headset on, right?
Yep. Yeah, and I think the goofy factor is obviously that's going to be the subject of Saturday Night Live jokes, and you know, for the next 10 years, but like it doesn't matter because over time, it's just like the AirPods, it's just like everything else, like it'll become normalized to an extent, and particularly, like I said, this thing is big. It's not just ski goggles, but like it's also like physically off your face in front of you. I mean, it's Apple made it look about as cool as you can make it, but it's still not going to be cool for a while.
But, yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see. Like, I joked around. I put my goalie helmet on, my goalie mask on, and I, you know, imagined what it would like be like with this on instead of a cage, right?
Right.
I mean, that works. Or you could have like a construction helmet, or that's the dog making that noise.
Yeah, like a full on Daft Punk helmet. Yeah, I mean, you could totally.
Yeah, like, or motorcycle helmet or something like that, right? Like, there's lots of different ways they could have dealt with this, but
yeah,
is that really necessary? I'm say hi.
Oh wow, it's a big pup.
But she's four months old. She's 20, almost 30 pounds.
Wow.
Already. Yeah, pain in the butt. But she's the reason why you get Apple Care for your Vision Pro.
Yes. Totally not. It's like a no brainer. I saw the repair cost for one breakage. Yeah. I'm like, yep, Apple Care.
No, I mean, already people are talking about having a crack in the front.
Yeah, and I can see that being a manufacturer's thing where they'll replace it under warranty. But yeah, that looks weird.
I'm not really,
yeah. It looks to me like that wasn't dropped because that's like a very fine, like perfect split down the middle that looks more like, you know, like it was too hot when they molded the plastic or something.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah,
it could be hot and cold and running in and out of. Mind you, I haven't really, other than taking it to meetings to meet people, I'm not brave enough to do the coffee shop thing. I'm going to see the Leafs game tonight and kind of like somebody joked they should wear it in the stands and just for the notoriety. But I got my fake one here. Like I've got my, you know,
yep.
I could put that on.
Yep.
But cool. All right. Well, we normally have picks on the show. Have you got any apps or anything you'd like to call out?
One app that a friend of mine pointed me to that I didn't realize existed or it's new is it's called Television or Sandwich Vision or something like that. I think it's actually called the Television app, but it's made by Lonely Sandwich. If you don't know who Lonely Sandwich is, he's that guy in the commercial you've probably seen. Yeah, it's just called Television. Sorry, I'm looking at it now. You've probably seen him in commercials. If you ever like the Studio Neat guy, he does the narrations. He's like that really like deadpan guy. He's a really nice guy. I've actually met him. He's got an app called Television, and basically it lets you choose from like 30 or 40 different like old timey TV sets or like flat screens or like other types of configurations of televisions. And then it projects the video into that TV. So you could do like a Max Headroom type thing where you play a video and like stick it inside a television and just stick it in the corner of your room. It's kind of like a novelty fun thing.
Oh yeah. I did see that one. Yeah,
he's going to be adding the ability to stream Netflix on it and other things, you know, Hulu and things like that, which would make it even more powerful, I would think, because then he could, you know, in theory, that app could then replace the theater environments that they have in certain apps, especially since Netflix famously is not available natively. If they could figure out a way to stream Netflix, that'd be pretty cool, given that Netflix has made the decision not to even to make their iPad app available. But... You know, so I thought it was cool. It was like a novelty. It was a neat idea. It was like this cool combination. I know I talked earlier about like not trying to make everything about 3D, but I thought that was a neat novelty kind of way of playing around with the 3D concept. And it's relatively, it's like a one-time purchase kind of thing. And you know, they plan on adding things to it over time. So I thought that was a cool pick.
Cool. All right. Well, I have two follow-up things, which I didn't talk about at the top of the show here, but two fact-check things. I talked about AppleCare Plus, and I had mentioned that in the past, I think this may be a change with AppleCare Plus, but generally speaking, whenever I bought anything with AppleCare, like if I bought an iPad and a Magic Keyboard and a pencil, right, those would all be covered under the iPad Pro AppleCare. But so I was talking to Apple the other day, and my AppleCare Plus for my AVP, which technically doesn't work in Canada, by the way, I mean the support program, right, says right in the fine print, does not cover the lenses or the case that I bought on the same invoice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So
that's good to know.
I mean, yeah, it is what it is. And the dinosaur experience, the dinosaur experience that I talked about last time, which is an amazing demo, is actually by Jon Favreau, you know, from ILM and Pixar and stuff, right? So, which is cool. But my pick this week is vision.directory, which is a listing of all of the cool, this is where you're going to go next time, Joe.
Cool.
Is a listing of all of the apps that are available on the App Store. And they feature some, the reason I know about this is because they featured my app, which is a job searching app or tool to help you with your job search. And it works on iOS, iPad, and Vision Pro. And vision.directory and the television app that Joe mentioned there, that's where I found the La terminal or LA terminal. The minute I logged into my Mac from my Vision Pro, I thought I had died and gone to heaven.
this is awesome because it's so much easier to navigate than like finding these apps in the App Store.
Yeah, the App Store is, they still have a search problem in the App Store.
Yeah, they really do. So yeah, this is cool. This is more apps than I even knew was available. So, and I figured there had to be a ton of little indie apps that were getting hidden by the App Store algorithms. So,
Surprised. Like they still have. I think they still have the top 10 apps lists on the other App Stores. They don't seem to have one on the Vision Pro Store.
Yeah. Kind of weird.
It's weird. I know that's something you used to talk about on release notes when you guys were doing your show back in the day, was how bad the app search was.
Yeah.
So that pick was for you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm totally going to use this and find some more native apps. That's cool.
Cool. All right. Well, Joe, so if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you?
You can find me. That's a good question.
At a coffee shop in Boulder. Look for the guy with the goofy helmet.
Go look for the weirdo at the coffee shop in Boulder. But I'm not really on social much anymore. I am on Mastodon, but I forget what my link even is. I think it's just Joe Chaplinsky or Jay Chaplinsky probably at mastodon.social. You know, you can always find me at joec.design. It's probably the easiest way to find my website because it's technically joechaplinsky.com, but I had to redirect it because who the hell knows how to spell my name?
Right. Okay. So Joe C. Design?
Yeah, joec.design, yeah.
Oh, dot design. Okay, cool. All right. Well, my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A, on the Twitter machine, the Mastodon machine, all the things, Instagram, all that stuff. But I should probably say that I'm going to be doing the keynote talk at a conference in Beijing on March 30th and 31st. So,
nice.
Provided nothing happens between now and then. And also you can see me on the Beyond the Basics Reality Kit Pro and Reality Composer Pro and Reality Kit tutorials on Codico. Those are for subscribers only, but I don't know if they'll make, I think they're talking about making the introduction one or part of it free. But there you go. That's what I've been up to. So cool.
Nice.
And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends. Please leave a comment on the website, and if you can, please write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. So use the hashtag AskMTJC. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is @MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
Cool. You know, my only complaint about my, well, I don't, it's not a complaint, but I mean, I have an overbite, right? That's mm-hmm. something I've been living with my whole life, but my persona doesn't have an overbite.
My teeth won't come together. Like, no matter what I do, they're always like spaced. Yeah. Like there's like my upper and bottom. Like,
have you tried this one? Like you can touch your fingers mm-hmm. and they can't seem to get the last two to come together. Look at that.
See? Oh yeah. I tell you, I can't even begin to imagine how hard some of this stuff is, but yeah, that's weird.
Well, and the thing, what I don't understand is maybe there's an app for this, but like, why can't people, this is toilet, you know, I can't do thank you. Cause as soon as you put your hand near your face,
near the face, it just like wipes it out, which is right. Kind of unfortunate.
And then, what else? This is Wednesday. Apparently like there's a girl I follow on Threads who every day she comes out and does a word of the day.
Oh, cool.
You know, so thank you for doing that. But
yeah, you can't
but,
say
yeah, so I've been learning, but it would be really cool. Like if you could do ASL. Well, the other thing I should probably talk about is a pick, sort of a pseudo pick is, Paul Hudson did an app, like a theremin app.
Oh, that sounds cool.
It's called
cool.
Something Symphony. It's on the list there, but okay. And you basically you with your left hand you change the volume,
right?
And then on your right hand you change the pitch. So if you do this, you know, you get this weird sort of
right.
stuff
but,
happening.
But it's
in
like
the
a
app,
real
right?
theremin. I mean, that's kind of cool. It's a very neat idea. Obviously, makes perfect sense from a musical instrument standpoint. Yeah.
There's a default mode, there's a theremin mode, then there's some rate, and then if you go pro, there's all kinds of other synthesis that he's put in there, which is cool. I mean, I've, you know, when I discovered music on my Mac, I didn't play guitar for about 3 years because I just constantly played with janky 8-bit, you know,
right.
16-bit audio back in the day, right? So some music apps are something I've always been fascinated with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think about what Jordan Rudess has done on the iPad with his synthesis apps. Like, I could see him getting a vision and going crazy with having these 3D keyboards and stuff. And
yeah,
to see him at a Dream Theater concert with the big, with the headphones on, you know, with the helmet on and a wizard hat.
Yeah. Or doing a solo. I think I saw him do a solo one on an iPhone once. Like he just had an iPhone sitting on top of his keyboard and, you know, they cut to him and the camera's on the iPhone and he's doing like this with his fingers and this craziness totally, coming out of the speakers. Right.
Totally wild. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, phenomenal. Anyway, I got to go take care of a few things, but thank you for coming on the show. This has been a lot of fun. I'm not sure what one of our visages is going to show up on the, maybe all four. Who knows? Yeah,
who knows? Right.
But yeah, cool.
Okay.
Thanks for coming out.